heart. When the odds are saying you'll never win, that's when the grin should start. You gotta have hope. Mustn't sit around and mope. Nothing's half as bad as it may appear. Wait till next year and hope. When your luck is batting zero, get your chin up off the floor. Mister, you can be a hero. You can open any door. There's nothing to it but to do it. You gotta have heart. Miles and miles and miles of heart. Oh, it's fine to be a genius, of course, but keep that old horse before the cart. First, you gotta have heart.
A great slugger we haven't got.
A great pitcher we haven't got. A great ball club we haven't got.
What do we got?
Idea.
We've got hope. We don't sit around and mope. Not a solitary sod do we need, mister, cause we've got hope.
Boys, I'm proud of you.
We're so happy that we're humming.
That's the hardy thing to do.
Ho, ho, ho.
Cause we know our ship will come in.
So it's 10 years overdue.
Ho, ho, ho. We've got heart. Miles and miles and miles of heart. Oh, it's fine to be a genius, of course, but keep that old horse before the cart.
So what the heck's the use of crying?
Why should we curse?
We gotta get better, cause we can't get worse.
And to add to it, we've got heart. We've got heart. We've got heart.
You're traveling through another dimension. A dimension not only of sight and sound, but of mind. A journey into a wondrous land whose boundaries are that of imagination. There's a signpost up ahead. Your next stop, the Insurgent Radio Network.
Yeah, man, you gotta have heart. That's true. We got lots of heart here. In the bunker, right here in the bunker with all our friendly little spiders and mice and bugs and Jerry the Jew over here usually screaming his ears, screaming my ears off. He don't like for me to torture him. But we've been torturing him for years. Well, it's Terrible Tommy's Terrible Tavern and Steakhouse and Filling Station, where we only sell Ethel and Regula. And that's right next to our weapons of mass destruction, used equipment, used, refurbished, repainted, and sent out to you so you can get this goddamn rebellion going. Yeah! Like I've been telling you, we never had drones in here, but we got some slightly used drones that have come in here that only been used to kill a half a dozen wedding parties over in Iraq or Afghanistan, a couple of hospitals and like that. So they haven't been used much. So you can get a lot of good out of those things. Come on down here, and we've got them all spruced up, shined up, and everything. And We patched up the bullet holes from ISIS and all that kind of stuff. So it's summertime. Now's the time to get down here and purchase yours at discount prices with a full warranty. You bring your semi down here, your 18-wheeler, and pick them up, but park off to the side of the road so my neighbors can get by. Take them on back and get ready for this. Wait a minute. This isn't the winter. get ready for the next offensive. Whatever season that offensive falls in, man. We'll call it the Trump offensive. Yeah, right. Old Trumpy, he's going down to Mexico today. Well, he may not come back. those boys down there, cartels, I don't know whether they'd like him or not like him. If they don't like him, they could pick him up and he could disappear real quick down there. But you know what? I'm going to bet you anything, like I've always told you, you can never trust a politician or anybody running for office like that. Yeah, he's going to go down there and kiss the ass of the president of Mexico. You wait and see. They're softening it up. I don't know if they'll have the press there at the meeting. I doubt it. And he's going to, but if they don't, he's going to come out of the room. Oh, we got it all figured out. He's really a pretty good guy. We're going to straighten this thing out. And he'll probably let more Mexicans in than anybody ever did. Because that's the way these bastards work. However, wouldn't that be funny if the cartels kidnapped old Trump and held him for ransom? That'd be funny as hell. And they'd say, you got to send Ivana down there to get him out, too. Because that Mexican president wants to meet Ivana. Well, let's get serious here. I don't do this enough. And what we got here is a list. I should announce these birthdays and deaths of all our martyrs all the time, but for some reason it gets sometimes put aside. Now, people are always saying, well, when's somebody going to do something? What the hell? Nobody does anything. Well, I want to read you off a list of men and women who did something. And so I want to do this every once in a while so you don't ask me when somebody or who did something. Rick Cooper, he was the head of a National Socialist Party and had worked in the offices of George Lincoln Rockwell. Francis Parker Yockey, who wrote the great book Imperium. Ben Klassen, who wrote about a half a dozen books and spent a fortune trying to get a white man's religion going. Richard Butler, who spent everything he had on Aryan nations and died poor. Jeremiah Barnum, Gerald L.K. Smith, Upton Close, Margaret Sanger, Joe Tomasi, who was the forerunner to Bob Matthews, David Lynch, George Lincoln Rockwell, James Earl Ray, William Pelley, Benjamin Smith, Samuel Weaver, Colonel William Gale, Henry Ford, J.B. Stoner, Michael Perch, Larry Shoemaker, Richard Snell, J.B. Stoner, William Joyce, Hans Schmidt, Lothrop Stoddard, Albert Mariner, Bruce Carroll Pierce, Order Member, David Lane, Order Member, Hans Schmidt, I've said that before. I used to talk to him on the telephone quite a bit. Carl Strait, Rick Norton, Gordon Call, Mary Bacon, Jeff Hughes, Anthony Hancock, Richard Cotton, James Ford Seal, Gorham Oradson, William Pelley, Kathy Ainsworth, Ravlo P. Oliver, James Von Brunn, John Tyndall, James Huberty, William Pierce, Louis Thomas McFadden, Don Musgrove, Ken Miskey, Sam Bowers, William Shockley, Robert Miles, Bert Miller, Bruce Pierce, I said that before, Theodore Bilbo, A. Henderson, William Swift, Brian Kozel, Louis McFadden, Joe Rowan, John Cromlin, Admiral, Jeremiah Barnum, I said that before. Some of these are repeats. Daniel Restrom, Arthur Kirk, Jeff Hughes, Ezra Pound, I'm going to have to go over this list because I've got some of them repeated. Gene Craig, George Dietz, Herbert Poinsett, Mark Goydin, Connie Lynch, Joseph Bellies, Dillies, I forgot exactly how to pronounce his last name. Dillies, that's right, he was from Chicago. Now, I want to tell you, I met most of these people. I mean, of course, there's some here that died a long time ago, but most of these guys I met, personally knew them. George King, the feds tried to get him because they caught him with a machine gun. His father was the admiral in the Navy, a World War II hero in the Navy. Connie McGinley, he wrote a great paper back in the day. I forget the name of the paper. I'll remember it one of these days. Sam Napier was a National Socialist till the day he died. Rode on a motorcycle when he was clear up in his 80s. Carried a sword cane on his motorcycle. And he'd walk right in the middle of a bunch of Negroes and hand out racist papers. He had, when we had a riot in Oceanside, California, he was there taking motion pictures of it, standing right in the middle of the riot with stones flying all around him. Eugene John Parker Sage, Bertrand Comparé, Ernest Cox, Neil Bradley Long, Robert Shelton was the leader of the United Clans of America. Let's see here. Jack London, Robert Matthews, John Sanger, Byron De La Beckwith, Charles Lindbergh, Virgil Griffin, I think I did this William Shockley before, Fred Cowan. Fred Cowan went off on the Jews' employers up in, I think it was Milwaukee. And he was just a working guy, and they almost drove him nuts, and so he took a gun and started shooting him. I sent flowers to his grave because I know nobody else did. Well, let's see here. That's it, but there's more that we should be putting on here, and we got to straighten out this list too. Because every once in a while I'm going to read it off, because when I get all these people, especially new people, say, well, when's somebody going to do something? When nobody ever does anything. Well, most of these people I just read off their name devoted their life to the race. And most of them lost everything they had, including their lives, some in terrible ways. So tell people, hey, back them up against the wall and say, take that back, by God, we got plenty of heroes in this racial struggle. Remember that. Now, do these other groups, these so-called leader type groups, they ever talk about this? Oh, they do talk. They talk about Adolf Hitler all the time. Maybe Rudolf Hess. Most of them don't even remember or don't want to remember George Lincoln Rockwell. That's a shame. They take in donations and money and so forth because of what these people did before them. But they don't hold them up in reverence. The biggest leaders on the right really give reverence to nobody that's given their life and their fortune for the race. I think you should understand and know that. And that's just primarily the American martyrs that live in the United States. I mean, I didn't really get into Britain and Germany and Italy and France and all that. That would be hundreds more. Even Russia. Yeah. Well, there's a young lady got a few things to say, and she starts off by talking about this young boy you may have seen in the Middle East that they pulled him out of a war zone. He was 5 years old. He looks like he's dead, but he's alive. She's commenting on him and the involvement of the military-industrial complex of the United States and all the politicians, and none of them have any real excuses. They can scream defense all they want, but that's a lie, and you know it's a lie.
I hate having to talk about stuff like this. It makes me so upset. I feel so bad for this kid. I feel so bad for this kid because he's being used as a political pawn in a sick game that the American government and its Western allies are playing in the Middle East to rearrange all the chess pieces and remap the area under their control. It's disgusting. And people get really angry when you talk about stuff like this. But you know what? If we don't look at this and question it, if we just respond emotionally to it and then jump right on board with the sick, disgusting, unconstitutional, inhumane agenda that this government is running over there, then we're part of the problem. So we're going to talk about this. But before we even do, I want to say something. We don't even know, as American citizens, how many countries our government is currently bombing right now. Because we don't have a real media who tells us any kind of truth. My mother told me the other day that we have special operations forces at work in 135, she goes 135 or 136 countries, I'm not sure which it is. Well, to quote Hillary Clinton, what difference at this point does it make? If you got 135 countries, why don't you just say the whole world? Why don't you just say all of them? Our government has committed some of the most disgusting atrocities throughout this entire regime change mission in the Middle East. We're talking about airstrikes on wedding parties, killing every children and the bride, and I mean parties plural because they've done it multiple times. These ones I'm showing you are from 2008. I read about another one the other day that was from 2002. They also like to target someone, like a low, what they believe is a low-level terrorist, so that he's dead, and then they target the whole funeral. So they'll kill everyone at the funeral thinking that maybe some higher level terrorists will come to the funeral, but they actually just kill everybody at the funeral. And then what they also like to do is double strikes, double tap strikes. So when rescue workers come in, they'll actually strike again and kill all the rescue workers who might be trying to save anyone. They also will, you know, sometimes accidentally blow up a whole hospital, just the whole hospital. And they'll say, well, it was an accident, because, you know, these are such precision surgical strikes, right? Or they'll say a terrorist was being, you know, housed in the hospital, so they had to kill everyone in the hospital to get to that one terrorist. But what you'll never, ever see, what you'll never see ever is the talking head prostitutes like this woman on CNN sit up there and fake cry her ass over a picture of any of those victims. You will never see them say word one about our Nobel Peace Prize winning president and how many innocent people he's murdered. You just won't see that.
Now that includes Omron. And what strikes me is we shed tears, but there are no tears here. He doesn't cry once. That little boy is in total shock. We shed tears, but there are no tears here.
But you did see it over this picture, and they're calling this boy the napalm child of this generation. They are politicizing this kid and using him for every ounce of war propaganda they possibly can. It's really, really disgusting. So we're going to analyze this critically, because I think it's important that we actually look at this instead of believing the lies that we're told and supporting the war crimes of this government. So you have this kid being brought out from his apartment building, which looks like it's been bombed. He has what appears to be blood on the back of his head. A rescue worker is setting him down in a chair. I think the rescue worker is going to administer some kind of aid to him, but he doesn't. He just gets the thing and walks away, while all of these journalists and people with cameras just so happen to all be waiting there. I guess none of them are worried about double strikes. They're just waiting there with cameras so that they can take pictures of this little kid who looks like he's been left there as a prop. And he wipes his head and he looks at that and goes, what the hell? And he's like, God, that's gross. I'm just going to wipe that on the chair. It's horrible. There's obviously been a cut in the video, because now suddenly there's another child. There's two more children in there. And you've got all these people with cameras still filming. Then you have what appears to maybe be the dad coming out now, and he walks in front of the camera. There's been definitely some editing to this video. So that's the video. Now we're going to actually look at this. First, you see that this was put out by AMC, which is the Aleppo Media Center. The Aleppo Media Center has been outed as a pro-al-Nusra source of war propaganda. That's actually what they do. They've been seen many times covering up the crimes of al-Qaeda in the area or al-Nusra in the area, and using the footage of it and claiming it's Assad that did whatever in the footage, when actually it's ISIS or terrorists that have done it. That is what they do. They produce war propaganda. So knowing that right off the bat doesn't make me feel too good about the veracity of what's going on in this video. Secondly, on all of the Western outlets that were reporting on this, they said that this was going on in the Syrian city, the northern Syrian city of Aleppo, on Wednesday, August 17th, is when this happened. Okay? But if you look at the tweet that was sent out by the Aleppo Media Center originally, it was retweeted August 17th, but the original translation of this says, raw footage of aerial bombing on the eastern Al-Khatorji district Sunday evening. Well, Sunday evening and Wednesday, that's a pretty big difference. Secondly, you'll notice in this video, the guy who is waiting and who's been the key point man of information on this is a guy named Mahmoud Roslin. And you'll see him, he's this guy right here with the camera, with this blue shirt with the white pattern on it. This is the guy that everyone quoted in all of the Western media outlets on this story as the photographer behind the iconic image. This guy, Mahmoud, not only is he pro-regime change, pro-NATO, he's got Stop Russia as the background of his Twitter, but he likes to post pictures of himself with known terrorists on his Facebook page. And you can tell it's him because he's wearing the same exact shirt as in the video. See that shirt? See it? It's the same guy. He was wearing that same shirt the day that he posed for this picture with some known terrorists, especially this man here, who's been positively identified in multiple different outlets as being pictured in a video that came out a while back when they beheaded a 12-year-old Palestinian boy. That's him. See? This guy's name is Umar Salko, who is often described in Arabic media as the leader of the Zinki movement, a U.S.-backed terrorist group that claimed responsibility for the beheading of this 12-year-old Palestinian boy, and supposedly they were arrested and faced swift justice, but this guy here has been seen posting videos since then, so obviously the justice wasn't swift, it actually was non-existent. So this is a guy who has a complete and utter, total, 100% through-and-through agenda. Okay. Besides the fact that the Aleppo Media Center produced the video, and besides the fact that you have this completely suspicious guy who probably gets paychecks written to him straight from USAID, is what you see is who you see in the background when the dad, or I guess who I'm assuming is the dad, comes out. This guy right here in the white helmet with this logo on his shirt. These people are actually known as the White Helmets. Their entire function is to create war propaganda to push for the regime change in Syria.
Well, I can tell you that we provide through USAID about $23 million in assistance to them.
$23 million. Wait a second. Are the White Helmets not, and I quote, fiercely independent and accepts no money from governments?
They create war propaganda to demonize Assad. They like to hang out with Al-Qaeda, known Al-Qaeda members, White Helmets. They like to hang out with known terrorist groups. And they like to take pictures of things that happened a long time ago, or sometimes even in other countries, and say that Assad did it, and then send those out all over the media. And they've been caught doing it a whole bunch of times, like right here. This picture was originally taken April 14th, 2013. Here's a tweet from the White Helmets, August 20, 2015, of the same exact picture. But they're saying it's Assad's barrel bombs. Here's another one where they said, this was Ghouta, August 2015, NATO Islamist backers claim. Actually, in fact, it was when ISIL killed 700 pro-Syrian government tribes people, August 2014. So, it's a totally different picture from a totally different event. They just lied about it. Here's another one where Kenneth Roth of the Human Rights Watch, he's the one getting paychecks directly from George Soros, who's written, you know, $100 million checks to Human Rights Watch and stuff like that. He'll send things out and say, a drone's eye tour of what Assad's barrel bombs have done to Aleppo, May 2015, when in actuality, that picture's from a Israeli bombing in Gaza from August 2014. So it's just straight up lies. Even more disgusting when it comes to the White Helmets, and this video has actually been taken down since, but this is a video that shows them supposedly cleaning up an al-Nusra execution afterwards. And so that's who those people are. They create war propaganda. So there's a reason why when everyone saw this footage of this poor little boy, and they saw it getting spread out everywhere all over the place, they were like, hey, that really does look staged.
It's been seen by millions on the internet, but a video purportedly showing a young Syrian boy risking his life to save a terrified girl from gunfire is in fact a fake. The Norwegian Film Institute helped fund the video, according to the filmmakers, who say it was shot in Malta on a set previously used for blockbusters like Gladiator. Professional child actors were used. The Norwegian director behind the film is unrepentant. He says he wanted to shed light on the horrors facing children caught up in war.
I mean, there's only two things you can take from this. When you look at it, I mean, yeah, they're in a situation where they're hurrying to get other possible survivors. But he didn't even give this kid a towel to put on his bleeding head. He just set him down in a chair and walked away, while all of these people who obviously apparently aren't worried at all about double tap strikes, even though they claim that Assad does that all the time, they're just waiting there with cameras ready to go. So he's, at the very least, a damaged child who's been hurt in a horrible situation and is now being yelled at and photographed by all number of people who just happen to be there with cameras ready. They don't have anything better to do than sit there and film this kid. But at the very worst, his injuries have been doctored up with fake paint as a staged war propaganda exercise. Either way, the kid still ends up traumatized. And I wish I could say that kind of Wag the Dog level stuff. If you haven't seen the movie Wag the Dog, you should go watch it, because it's more relevant now than ever. But that kind of stuff happens. See this little girl? See that? If you put a bunch of dust on her head and stuck her in the back of an ambulance, people would think that was real too. But it's not. Okay? But if you slap a headline on it that says, Putin and Assad are horrible pieces of crap and look at what they did, people will believe it. They've really been beating back ISIS in Aleppo lately. Now they've been able to use this to get Russia to support a 48-hour ceasefire. They claim to bring in humanitarian aid. Who's to say they aren't going in to rearm the terrorists that they've been funding, arming, and training since the beginning? It is no secret that Western governments have created ISIS, have backed them, have trained them, have armed them. It's not, everybody knows this by now. Most people do. I guess what makes me angry enough about this to pick it apart and to bring it up to your attention is that this time they've gone so far as to have CNN anchors up there pretending to cry. Meanwhile, she's up there doing that, but she's totally complicit for years of the United States government murdering children and women and elderly people in so many countries. I don't know them all to tell you how many there are. And I don't think most Americans have any idea how many countries this government is actually bombing right now or unconstitutionally at war in. We're bombing Libya again. There are boots on the ground in Libya now. Okay? They are finding English-speaking, American-sounding people in Ukrainian army uniforms shelling cities. Okay? Do we even know what the hell is going on anymore? We don't. But they're going to trot out some poor little kid and they're going to use him for the most disgusting, vile, sick propaganda they can. Really not even probably to get humanitarian aid to anybody. Really probably just so they can continue to arm and fund the supposed opposition, which as we all know by now doesn't really exist. It's ISIS that they armed, trained, and funded and started up with. The documents have already been released. Everyone knows the truth, but they're still doing it. But they're going to sell this to the American people and the world. It's just disgusting. It makes me want to throw up.
Well, when I first started to put this on, I didn't realize there was so much video on this, so I'm going to send it out to you straight from Brass Check TV so you can see all the video with this, because it makes more sense when you see the video. But the audio was quite good. But it's just a sample of what's going on. I mean, you know, you go down to the average American on the street and he says, oh no, we're just defending America. We're not doing any of this stuff. Or we got to do it because they're shooting at us. You know, like if somebody invaded the United States, you don't think everybody that had a gun wouldn't turn out to shoot at them? Oh boy, it's enough to gag a maggot. Now, Judicial Watch has come out with a whole list, state by state, of counties where there's massive voter fraud. The whole thing, of course, is fraudulent, but I mean massive voter fraud at the local level, whether it's machines or what it is. And they said that there were 12 counties here in Indiana that had massive voter fraud. And I've called my congressman twice by phone, left a message. I want to know where those counties are. And this morning I called into my state senator and asked him where these 12 counties were, and we'll see how fast that he replies. It's interesting because I think I would say that they're mostly up in northwest Indiana near Chicago, where obviously there are more blacks, and around Indianapolis, the state capital, where the blacks are quite numerous there too. So it'll be interesting to see whether I ever get the reply. I project that this is going to be one of the elections. It's going to be the worst voter fraud election in history in the United States. Judicial Watch is going to be able to submit questions to Hillary for the debate and I guess other interviews. I don't know for sure. I'll read them off to you. 1. Describe the creation of the ClintonMail.com system, including who decided to create the system, the date it was decided to create the system, why it was created, and who set it up when it became operational. 2. Describe the creation of your Clinton email.com email account, including who decided to create it, when it was created, why it was... Well, I'm not going to... This is too many. There's too many questions here, and they're too long. Yeah, we're talking about what we got here. 25? I guess, 25 questions that they're supposedly going to give her. But she'll just say, I don't want to answer, and she won't answer. You know, it's such a game. It's sad to see true believers who believe, still believe there's some redemptive quality in this government, that try to do things in the honest way and think that maybe it might work, but it never does. I think the only way you'd ever get any truth out of her is to waterboard her. And then I don't know whether you would. Well, I see this Chris Brown, which is, he's probably basketball or football star or something, niggerball star of some type, and waving a gun in his white whore girlfriend's face, and he's all upset because the house is surrounded by cops. Now, this guy's beat white women to a pulp many times, several times. I have absolutely no sympathy whatsoever with these white whores that go with these niggers. If they're not smart enough to know what kind of people these guys are, besides being a racial crime as far as I'm concerned. So let's listen to Chris complain about how he's being treated.
So I'm asleep half the damn night. I just wake up. All these motherfucking helicopter choppers is around. Police out there at the gate. Come on, my nigga. What the fuck else do y'all want from me, bro? I stay out of the way, take care of my daughter, do work. I don't even fuck ugly bitches, trifling bitches, whatever the fuck it is. I'm not on that, bro. I'm way too tired and I'm gonna be dealing with this bullshit. Y'all, every 3 months, y'all got tired of me, right? It gotta be. Every 3 months, y'all come up with something, bro. What is it? What's gonna be next? I'm a fart of elephant? Come on, my nigga. But at the same time, when I call the police for stalker people that are endangering my life, they don't come till the next day. Let somebody make a fucked up allegation about me. And, oh yeah, the whole fucking SWAT team. My nigga, I'm innocent. Fuck everybody. I'm tired of hearing this shit.
See what niggerball has done to this country, you know? And guess who built it? These white saps out there, these white morons, that a good share of them are Republicans. Oh yeah, they're white boys. They just love their niggers. Love their nigger boys. Love that nigrophilia. Now I see this house of this particular nigger is about a $2 million house. I'm not sure where it's located. Maybe more. But in the last year, 7 or 8 times, he's beaten the shit out of somebody. Of course, it's always a woman, you know. Yeah, and it's always a good-looking white woman, you know. And, well, if they don't listen, they're going to have to feel. I wouldn't lift one finger to help her. I wouldn't. You know, on Monday, Webmaster ran that show, that package show that I did, and I did that interview, which I thought was pretty good. But he kept asking me, don't I feel sorry, don't I empathize with these Sikhs that got shot up there in Wisconsin or Minnesota? I don't understand that kind of thinking. You can't truthfully say that you care like you would a friend or somebody in your family or anything like that. You don't know these people. You know, even white people that get killed thousands of miles away, what can I feel about that? I'd be lying if they're racial separatists, one of my people, that would be different. But as far as having empathy, would I command it? Would I encourage what the guy did up there to the Sikhs? No, I wouldn't. What I advocate always has been to round them up and ship them back out of the country. That's the answer you have to have. If you're not prepared to do that, just shooting a few up in their little temple is is counterproductive, really, because they use that kind of propaganda against us, you know. So, but when they ask, well, don't you feel sorry? Well, I'll guarantee you he doesn't. The news media reporter guys, they're the hardest hearted people around. They don't give a shit. They just want a story. I guess he wanted me to say, oh, I feel so bad about those dead Sikhs. Well, I don't, because I'm not responsible for it, and I don't encourage it, and it's counterproductive. But it's these right-wing conservative groups that are racial is where they get promoted into that kind of activity. You know, it just keeps happening. They don't catch on. So who are you going to blame? Well, I blame these right-wing conservative neocon racist leaders that really encourage it at their meetings and so forth. Well, I suppose you saw that an ISIS leader was killed over there, and I guess it was Egypt or someplace over there. It doesn't make any difference, just like that one clip of audio clip I put on here. They got a new leader before the guy's cold. I mean, he's still warm. They already got leaders. They got thousands of leaders. That's the name of the game. So killing one, that doesn't make a dent. I could tell you who should be killed if you want to stop ISIS, but I'm not going to, because I don't want to be drug off to interrogation by some agents. Well, I see the Maine governor, Mr. LePage, I believe is his name, Paul LePage, his ass is in the fire. He said something that wasn't politically correct. He said something that could be considered racist. And now he's considering whether he ought to step down. Well, if he had the balls to say it, he should have the balls to stay in there and tell him to go to hell. But I have emotions about this thing are very simple. These fat-ass governors and senators and congressmen, most of the time they don't have the balls to do anything or say anything, you know, that might be offended somebody. But once in a while they're either drunk or something or on crack cocaine, and they slip and say something racist, and then they end up apologizing all over the place and maybe resigning. Well, good riddance, you bastard. Either stand for what you believe and say screw you, or get out of the main office of governor. You know, these people that are pushing this politically correct stuff have to be taken care of intellectually, spiritually, and emotionally. Tell them, I said it, God damn it, I mean it, and if you don't like it, you can kiss my white ass. Here's one of the many new house niggers that are supporting Donald Trump, and it's funny as hell.
Picture is designed to do draw attention to the very fact that Hillary Clinton do pander after black people. She do pander, and the policies are not good for African Americans. It is doing exactly what it's designed to do.
And the last thing I want to do is to offend people. The tweet was not designed to anger or stir up the pot like it did.
In Afghanistan by this time, Barack Obama went into Afghanistan creating another problem. It was Hillary Clinton and her incident in Libya, which was also a reckless decision to create that vacuum. They armed the rebels, and they're even funding them now.
Okay, so you're saying Barack Obama took the country into Afghanistan post-2009. Is that what you're saying?
What I'm saying is the policy
you just said that we
of
weren't
Barack
in
Obama
Afghanistan.
And Hillary Clinton... That was Obama's war, yes. Yes, he has said that she doesn't have the strength or the stamina for a very long time. That part is nothing new. What's new are the other reports of the observations of Hillary Clinton's behavior and mannerisms.
Now, this house nigger, he made a cartoon about Hillary Clinton in blackface, and so he's having to back down, ride his bicycle backwards. And this other gal is one of Trump's supporters, and she can't even get it straight. that when we started in Afghanistan, he said it was under Obama. Well, it wasn't either. It was under George Bush Jr. So they got a bunch of amateurs, really bad spokesmen, both sides. And Hillary is despicable, but the other side is getting just as bad. Here's an interesting article. Can the alt-right just distance itself from the neo-Nazis? Let's see what this is all about. Milo Yiannopoulos, the infant, terrible apologist for the alt-right, made headlines this spring with an article called, quote, "An Establishment Conservative's Guide to the Alt-Right," unquote, in which he and his co-author, Alim Bukhari, defended the makers of anti-Jewish, racist, and anti-feminist internet cartoons as subversive rebels. Quote, "These young rebels, a subset of the alt-right, aren't drawn to it because of an intellectual awakening or because they're instinctively conservatives," unquote, he wrote in the section titled "The Meme Team." Ironically, they're drawn to the alt-right for the same reason that young baby boomers were drawn to the new left in the 60s, because it promises fun, transgression, and a challenge to social norms that they just don't understand, unquote. Keegan Hanks, a data intelligence analyst at the SPLC, that's Morris Dees, says that although much of this online activity is ostensibly aimed at expanding the Overton window of the acceptable political discourse, the meme team is a real source of alt-right ideology. There are people who are just in it for the chaos. That's me. Just doing it for the laughs, he said. But he said, Yiannopoulos' article with its suggestions that the memes were entirely benign was laughable and dishonest. I think they're being strategically used as a vehicle to get ideas out there, unquote, he said. Oh, they wouldn't do that. Hanks also noted that Yiannopoulos' article failed to mention one of the leaders of the alt-right, Internet Frenzy. Oh, Andrew Anglin, pictured at the top of this article, publisher of the neo-Nazi website Daily Stormer, which bills itself the world's most visited alt-right site. Daily Stormer hosts a messaging board where many popular alt-right memes are first published. Anglin also often pushes social media agenda by asking the readers to tweet using hashtags such as white genocide and rapeugee. Anglin has taken has clashed over several occasions with the approach of Richard Spencer, the head of the National Policy Institute, a think tank devoted to the ideology of alt-right. Getting a little confusing here, boys and girls. Spencer has, in his published writings and public interviews with Reddit, declined to issue the kind of hateful proclamations against people in the LGBT community and Jews that are Anglin's bread and butter. Yeah, he waves those Jews around like mad, and Hitler too. Spencer is attempting to legitimize the alt-right movement. Anglin seems to want to make sure it never forgets its roots. The reason Anglin was omitted from the Yiannopoulos article was to protect Richard Spencer, Hank said, as two very visible leaders of the alt-right. One online and one in Washington, they seem to be engaged in a struggle over the direction of the alt-right movement. There it goes. These things always end up in squabbles. After Spencer announced the lineup for last year's annual NPI conference, I didn't even get invited. Anglin took to Daily Stormer to give his praise until he found out something he could not abide. "It has come to my attention that Jack Donovan is an open homosexual, and as such, I'm withdrawing my support for this conference," unquote. Anglin wrote in May 2015, quote, I encourage people to boycott the conference in protest of the inclusion of an open homosexual in the pro-white movement. Hey, buddy, I'm going to tell you, you're going to find more than one homosexual in these right-wing get-togethers. I know that from years past. Saying there's only one homosexual in their big meeting? Bullshit. Yet Anglin continued, he and Spencer remained on the same page about one of the most important things. Spencer is now confronting the Jew problem more directly. Well, let's be specific about that Jew problem. It's unclear if and how the next NPI conference will help bridge the gulf between the would-be politicos like Spencer and the glorified internet trolls like Anglin, or widen it. Yet, even if Anglin is eventually pushed to the side to make way for Spencer's more inclusive agenda, chances are that he will be able to keep his site at the heart of online alt-right community. For one thing, Anglin has a clear grasp of modern media sensibilities. He started the Daily Stormer in 2013, a year after creating TotalFascism.com. Wait a minute, I jerked the deal there. A site similar to Richard Spencer's led Radix Journal and published long-form essays on white supremacy. Daily Stormer is characterized by short articles with many GIFs, GIFs, and embedded tweets and videos, much in the style of classic BuzzFeed articles. It was more effective as propaganda to generate content and not long format essays, said Hanks. These are calculated campaigns, he added. These guys aren't fools. Yeah. No, they're not. No, they're not. What else we got here? There was another article here about the alt-right. Well, anyhow, I guess you and me, we're not one of the unwashed. We are part of the unwashed. We don't get invited to these conferences. You know, they've changed so much, the right wing, that you can't keep up with it, especially if you're not really interested in it. And the white right-wing racism in this country is, as usual, it always goes down the same rabbit hole, with a few leaders fighting with each other usually, and they've got all the answers. They got the whole ball of wax, like Ben Klassen said. And people like you and me, we're way out there on the outside. I don't even know what they call us. We're so far out. Because we stick to race is the issue, period. Yeah, race is the issue, period. Not even just the Jews. Because, you know, Jews do bad things, Jews do good things, you know. So, once in a while, I mean, you know, so we concentrate on the race issue. We're racial separatists. And that's all that's really important to us, is to get ourselves separated from other races. Now, these guys, most of these guys won't even accept that plausibility. So that's, there we go. So anyhow, that's it from the neo-con right-wing racist side of politics.
Jesus, remembered history, or a religious fable? Is the story of Jesus remembered history, or a religious fable? When many of the other arguments for a historical Jesus fall over, you will often hear the argument, well, mainstream historians say there was a Jesus, so that must settle it. There must have been a Jesus. It is also the case that many atheists, though convinced that there's no God, will also say, well, I think there was a Jesus. So I want to take a few minutes to convince you that mainstream historians, and atheists possibly influenced by them, are actually wrong. Now let's first of all clarify just who it is we are talking about. We are not speaking of any old character of the first century Galilee who had the name Jesus. There were lots of those, literally thousands, because Yeshua or Yehoshua was one of the most common Jewish names of the time. We are speaking of a character who was supposedly the source and inspiration for the fantastical tales that fill the pages of the New Testament. Yes, I am allowing for the fact that embellishment and exaggeration could have been applied to an original, simple and genuine tale, that the man behind the legend may have been a rather ordinary character. But of course, it could not have been too ordinary, or he would not have stood out from the thousands of others who shared his name. Let me introduce you to one such figure, one favoured by mainstream historians such as Bar Ehrman and others. For them, the real Jesus was a prophet in the style of earlier Jewish prophets, who had a following for his particular brand of end-time doom and gloom. Because he was unexpectedly executed, his despairing followers reinvented him as a risen Messiah or Christ. All else in the New Testament is embellishment and invention. So here we have a rationalized, acceptable Jesus, who doesn't suspend the laws of the universe. But he is only one of hundreds of rationalized Jesuses. You may have a favourite of your own, a radical rabbi, a Jewish nationalist, a healer, a teacher, you name it. They are all equally valid and all equally speculative, floating free of any factual foundation. Now, why do I say these various alternative Jesuses are speculations? Because not one of them is based on hard, verifiable evidence from non-biblical sources. Any one of them is possibly true, but is any one of them even probably true? Each is derived from a selective reading of the gospel stories. Each is built up from certain passages, discounting all the rest as pious fabrication. That's why the so-called mainstream historians cut the ground from beneath each other. What is the pious fabrication to one is the residual element of a genuine historical episode to another. Yet not one part of the story is immune from being pious fiction to some and having the ring of truth to others. But there is an alternative to this free-for-all join-the-dots-and-make-your-own-Jesus approach, and that is to recognize that these speculations are no better than seeing the signs of the zodiac in the night sky. In reality, there is no figure there, whether a sign of the zodiac or a Jesus of Nazareth. Now, Christianity makes a claim that a truly fabulous character started the movement with his teachings and miracles, climaxing in his resurrection appearances after death. But can rational minds really claim that some minor character below the visible event horizon of history was either necessary or useful to a story that is acknowledged to be, in all salient aspects, fabricated from religious literature? The simplest, parsimonious explanation is that no human Jesus ever existed. Now, although historians like Bar Ehrman think that it required the memory of a dead holy man to get the first Christians dreaming up a resurrected Messiah, in truth, merely the idea of a dead holy man works just as well. And we can be absolutely certain it was just the idea of a dead holy man, because the one thing we can say about the Gospels is that they were not written by simple, illiterate, Aramaic-speaking fishermen and peasants who knew Jesus, but were written decades later by literate-educated writers who wrote in Greek and were, incidentally, rather hazy about the Jewish landscape. We are not dealing with eyewitnesses. The gospel writers had either to be told the story or had to read their inspiration elsewhere. And what could they have read in the holy books of the Jews, translated into Greek centuries earlier? They would have read of healing and resurrection miracles, tales of food multiplication, of divine judgments, of wise prophets in special communication with God, who wander about making pleasing and sometimes enigmatic wisdom statements. They would have read of a suffering servant who takes on the sins of the world, of babies born by divine intervention. In other words, they would have read all the core elements in order to write an inspiring story of a Jewish saviour God-man, a Jesus Christ. All good stuff, of course, for a religious fable. But it isn't history. It isn't true. It's more astounding rubbish.
You gotta get this mythology out of your brain, because it can waste your life away. It wasted quite a bit of my life till I finally broke loose from it. That's it for today. Yeah, this is Wotan's day, David Lane's favorite day. I'll be back tomorrow on Thor's day, okay? Think white, act white, be white, and kick their ass.